30 minutes talk and 5 minutes discussion.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about the SWIFT MIDEX mission. Actually, I should apologize. I have been so busy working on SWIFT, as many other people have back at Goddard and other institutions, that I couldn't attend the first 4 days of this meeting, and so I apologize if in this era of real-time science my understanding of gamma ray bursts has changed is behind in the last 4 days. So here's the executive summary. I'll go and expand in a lot more detail in all these individual bullets. But basically, the SWIFT mission, I should say that we won the we've gotten through the first gate. We were selected down from 33 or 35 MIDEX missions down to one of the five for Phase A study. And we are busily producing more results, development, and building hardware for the Phase A proposal, which is due in June, and announcement in September. Okay, the executive summary. SWIFT is nominally a three-year mission. It will detect about 1,000 gamma ray bursts in that time period. It will localize all of them to 0.3 or 2.5 arc seconds, okay, very small air boxes. It's a multi-wavelength observatory. It has three instruments which combine detect the gamma ray bursts initially in the gamma ray. Then there are narrow field of view instruments in the X-ray, ultraviolet, and optical to monitor the afterglow. The calculation, the detection and calculation of the gamma ray burst locations from the gamma ray detector is done on board. The spacecraft operations are autonomous, and the slewing reaction time is fast, 20 to 70 seconds, minimum to maximum time. So we will be on target for all of these 1,000 bursts at most 70 seconds after the beginning of the burst. It's five times more sensitive than BATSE. We have spectroscopy capability, both in the X-ray, 0.2 keV, up into the hard X-ray and gamma ray, 150 keV. That's done with the X-ray telescope and the gamma ray burst detector. The optical telescope has broadband filters plus a GRISM. So ultraviolet and optical spectroscopy is capable. E over delta E, ranging from 300 to 600. And this GRISM spectroscopy can be done for bursts, optical afterglows with a magnitude greater than 17. Because we have these broadband filters on the optical and ultraviolet, we can measure the redshift directly within the SWIFT system for these bursts using the detecting the Lyman alpha edge. And the bottom line that I'll probably stress many times through the course of this talk, the results will be distributed within seconds to everyone who wants them. Okay, now a little more about expand a little more. The science objectives, determine the origin and counterparts to gamma ray bursts, use them as, since they're very bright candles, use them as probes into the early universe, Z's of 1 to 3, 4, 5, around there. That's composed of three instruments, a wide field gamma ray detector. I'll expand more of these in later view graphs. There's an X-ray telescope and an optical telescope, which has UV capability, which is not possible from ground base, so it also makes SWIFT a rather unique mission. And I've already said that it's autonomous and rapid slew capability. Okay, now to cover some identity of the principal players. Here's a list of all the institutions that are currently involved in the SWIFT collaboration. It's a Goddard-led mission. Neil Garrels is the PI, but there are very significant contributions from Penn State and Leicester universities. Countries involved, United States, Italy, and UK. The spacecraft is being made by Spectrum Astro. Here is a partial list of now people with all those institutions and what their function is. This is just a partial list of people, basically the leads for each area. I don't think there's really much point in explaining each one of those. Okay. Even this, as you might guess here, I'm using a standard set of NASA view graphs that are prepared for a wide range of audiences. It's hardly required for this audience, but let me just say that they are the most powerful explosions in the universe. And this model has been the topic of many discussions. They will be used neutron star mergers, neutron star black hole mergers, or failed hypernovas, failed supernova hypernovas, tracers for star formation. And obviously, since these are cosmological, we now know they'll be used to probe the distant and early universe. Here's another one of NASA's nice view graphs here. I mentioned this, these are extremely popular press items, but I would also point out that gamma-ray bursts are now interesting within traditional astronomers as well. And so I think we have a rather unique opportunity here to get a dedicated gamma-ray burst mission selected in this MIDEX process. Things are developing very rapidly. The January 23rd burst, magnitude 9 by ROTCE at essentially T0, has made this a very popular topic with many people, even outside the gamma-ray burst community. Okay, again, as you all know, Beppo Sachs revolutionized this field with the February 28th burst of 97 when they detected the afterglow at T plus 6 hours and saw it fading 2 days later. Gave everybody proof that there was something to look at. Redshifts have been measured. These things are cosmological. The afterglow decay power law has predicted. Everything worked out very well. Sort of repeating here, as I've said, Beppo Sachs demonstrated that gamma-ray bursts are at cosmological distances. Therefore, luminosities were determined, integrating the light curve, total energy output, very powerful. Proving that gamma-ray bursts are even more interesting than we already knew they were. SWIFT will advance this field by capitalizing on the Beppo Sachs concept. Beppo Sachs had the right instruments. They had a relatively wide field of view gamma-ray burst detector, hard X-ray gamma-ray burst detector, wide field camera. They can do about 10 a year. SWIFT will do 300 a year instead of 10, factor of 30 improvement. We'll get a large statistical sample. And because all three instruments, the gamma-ray, the X-ray, and the optical, are combined on a fast a dedicated mission, a fast-moving autonomous mission. The follow-ups done by the two narrow field of instruments, the X-ray and optical, will be 1,000 times faster than BepoSAC's can do. And what are the basic questions? The sites, where they are in the host galaxies, what are the objects, the local environment within the galaxies, around the burst, source objects. Are there multiple classes of gamma ray bursts? Right now, BepoSAC seems to be triggering on, I'll show in a minute, the long duration gamma ray bursts. BepoSWIFT will not have that limitation. So now a little more about the instruments. Here's a diagram showing three instruments. This is the coded aperture for the burst alert telescope, the gamma ray burst detecting telescope. These two, the X-ray telescope and the optical telescope here, all are co-aligned. The X-ray and the optical telescopes look within almost the center field of view of the BAT telescope. That's to minimize slewing time, 20 to 70 seconds. The burst alert telescope, BAT is a coded aperture system. Already mentioned, it operates 10 to 150 keV, uses CADZinc TEL detectors, pixelated detectors with the 4 millimeter pixel size with 5 millimeter coded aperture cell size. It has the ability to calculate a fair amount to do the FFT and back projection methods to calculate the positions on board. It will produce these positions with arc minute, sort of 1 to 4 arc minute accuracy, which is well within the field of view of the fields of view of the two narrow field of instruments, so there'll be no chance of missing these things when we slew. The other two instruments are dedicated follow-up systems for the burst detected by BAT. The X-ray telescope, 0.3 to 10 keV telescope, the ultraviolet and optical telescope, UVAT, runs from 170 to 650 nanometers, ultraviolet to red. The positions for 0.3 arc seconds for the optical telescope and 2.5 arc seconds for the X-ray telescope. Both of these systems use existing hardware from previous missions. The X-ray telescope mirror set comes from JEDEX, the CCDs from XMM. The optical telescope, UVAT, is the optical monitor for the XMM mission, Flight Spare. I'll have more to say about that in a later view graph. Because of the broadband filters and GRISMs, we can determine the redshifts for using the Lyman alpha cutoff, and also, say, oxygen or iron lines in the X-rays. Can determine the redshift directly. Okay, now some details about each of the instruments. Burst Alert Telescope, BAT, is an array of a little over 5,000 square centimeters of CADZinc TEL detectors. Down here, 1 meter height, there's a coded aperture system, two steradians field of view for half-coded, about one steradian for fully coded. It operates over 10 to 150 keV. There are, as I said, pixelated CZT detectors down at the bottom here. There's 256 detector modules. Here's an example, an image of a built demonstration detector module. CADZinc TEL, 4 millimeter pixel size. There are 8 by 16 individual blocks of CADZinc TEL in one of these detector modules. 256 of these items tile the detector plane at the bottom of that. It's five times more sensitive than BASSY. It will detect about one burst per day. This number is somewhat uncertain. It will definitely do half a burst per day, but given variations in evolution and of gamma ray bursts in the universe, the log n log s extrapolation under some models can produce as high as one burst per day. The angular resolution of this 4 millimeter pixels down here and a half 5 millimeter up here is 22 arc minutes, but the position centroiding calculation will be 1 to 4 arc minutes for all bursts. And I believe I said this, as we'll see in a moment, this is well within the field of view of the other two narrow field instruments.
So that's for the full aperture, the part coded.
Yes. Onboard processing happens in two stages, a fast Fourier transform method to produce a coarse position. Let me save that for the next view graph. The positions are calculated onboard in real time, transmitted to the satellite attitude control system and also to the ground, so the spacecraft can slew over and point the narrow field instruments at the first location. This all happens in a matter of seconds. When I mean seconds, I mean literally seconds, 4 to 5 seconds. Also, transmitting them to the ground happens in seconds. That detector module that I showed you in the previous view graph was used in the laboratory with a coated aperture mask and an americium 241 source, which produces a 60 keV gamma ray photon to produce this image. This is an actual gamma ray laboratory image using the demonstration detector module, coated aperture mask, and real gamma rays in the FFT production to produce this, when you deconvolve, produces this image here. The bottom two panels are now simulations. This is real data. This is simulation. Here shows when you do the FFT, you get a flat, noisy background with some bright peak somewhere in the field of view. Zooming in on that, what you see here is gives you an idea. Sorry, I forget what the scale is on this these images here. But the centroiding of this location will be to the 1 to 4 arc minute position. This sort of cute little diagram here is these are 128 spectra, measured spectra for that module that I showed you in the previous geograph. Picking one of them here, I actually don't think it's the corner one, but showing down here is a blow up of one of those things, basically, for americium 241 source, 60 keV. Again, there's a roughly 5% full width half max energy resolution. And I would like to impress on people, this is a real measured system. This is not model calculations. We've built several of these detector modules now in our development process, ongoing development process for the SWIFT mission. Yes, it is. That is, with the Fiona's referring to the I won't be getting into it, but we use, might as well take a tangent here and say we'll be using the Ideas Corporation, a Norwegian corporation, produces a chip called the XA1, which is 128 linear chains, thresholding capability, self-triggering. In each one of those detector modules, one ASIC, one of these XA1 ASICs, is used and hooked up using chip-on-board technology to collect the signals and process them from the 128 blocks of CZT.
Will there, if you don't distinguish them quite that way and you don't signal together, how much does the resolution degrade?
If you lump the...
5%. combine them all together, how much loss is there beyond that kind of thing?
None.
None. You have calibration on each one?
Yes. I got to get going here. X-ray telescope, XRT. Again, the SWIFT mission is a minimum risk mission because we're using so much existing hardware. This is the actual flight mirror module from JetX. Be reused, or not reused, but will be used in the SWIFT mission. It has 15 arc second to half power width with a very sharp core, which allows centroiding, 3.5 meter focal length. Total collecting area is not really the right amount. It's 110 square centimeters of effective area. This is true, the geometric area is 150, but the important number is mirrors out here at this end, CCD, flight spare from the XMM program, CCD down here, 24 by 24 field arc minute field view, as you can see. It's well, much larger than the position accuracy of that, so we will. It will always be on target. A couple of performance plots here. Sensitivity, okay, for a 1,000-second integration, you've got a few, 10 to the minus 13 ergs per square centimeter per second. For a 1 millicrab source, you can do a 3 arc second centroid calculation, and the standard effective area here, we see a maximum of about 110 square centimeters effective area for XRT. Moving on to the third instrument now, the ultraviolet and optical telescope, UVOT. It's also using existing flight hardware. It's using the mirror from XMM program. Covers 170 to 650 nanometers. It's a 30 centimeter aperture telescope. It can go down to 24th magnitude in 1,000 seconds. Again, 17 arc minute field view. Much larger than the accuracy of the bat positions. It's an intensified CCD array. It will provide unique coverage, as will the XRT, on that because the system calculates positions on board and is autonomous, the light curves now start at 20 to 70 seconds after the gamma ray burst instead of hours later, currently with the SATS mission. Picture here of the XMM optical monitor. I believe Tim Sassine will be telling more in the next talk. A filter wheel hardware, all existing, no risk. Life is wonderful. Okay, I mentioned that there was 6 filters on board, and here they are, standard wavelength, okay, green down to ultraviolet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is the yellow curve, is the CCD quantum efficiency. Using the magnitudes measured from one band to the next will allow you to do, using the Lyman alpha cutoff, to measure these Zs directly. It also has a GRISM on board in one of those filter wheel positions with a resolution E over, or lambda over, delta lambda of about 500. It can do that for slightly brighter, whereas magnitudes less than 17. These optical ultraviolet capabilities are, as you well know, are not available on ground-based systems, so SWIFT is unique in that area. Science objectives for the SWIFT mission. Obviously, what are the sites of the gamma ray bursts and what are the objects? Identify the host galaxies by obtaining less than 2 arc second X-ray positions for all gamma ray bursts detected. You'll be able to identify the host galaxy, if there is one. You'll know whether there is or not. 0.3 arc seconds for the optical positions. When there are host galaxies, it will allow you to measure the distance directly using SWIFT only. Don't even need ground-based observations, although we certainly encourage those. You'll be able to measure the distance from the host, and with the large number of bursts that SWIFT is going to detect, you'll be able to see for like coalescing neutron stars or neutron star black hole, which will have a radial distribution something like this, or hypernova, which follows the star formation more tightly coupled towards the core. With the 1,000 or so bursts that SWIFT will detect, you'll see those distributions and be able to tell which one it is, or a third type, yet unknown. Are there multiple classes of gamma ray bursts? The bursts detected so far by BepoSAX have all been long bursts. Here's a plot I'm sure many of you are familiar with. It's a distribution of BATSE detected bursts, durations showing a population with short around a half a second, and a duration, another population around 10 seconds. BepoSAX bursts are all fall in this category, long bursts. The trigger criteria used for by the BAT instrument will operate from 2 milliseconds to 32 seconds, much larger than the, a much larger dynamic range than the 64 to 1,000 milliseconds that BATSE uses. So we will find out, we'll be sensitive to these guys, this population, and even shorter down to here, if there's even a third distribution population. And going out to 32 seconds, that'll be roughly 30 times longer than BATSE's longest trigger time. So again, SWIFT is expanding on the current systems already available. What can gamma ray bursts tell us about the early universe? I'm sure many of the talks earlier in this meeting have concentrated on this, so I will just go through some standard things. The very top level, search for X-ray line features using XRT will directly measure the redshift. Also UVAT with its filters and grisms from the Lyman edge, and as I've said, measures the Z of each burst directly. Ground-based follow-ups, Keck, Hubble, although that's not strictly ground-based, will identify host galaxies by exposing longer and much deeper. Gamma-ray bursts are bright. They're at cosmological distances. They can be used as beacons to study the Lyman Alpha forest for all the material, interstellar, intergalactic material that's between the burst and here. A topic that's close to my heart, the positions determined by all three instruments will be distributed, transmitted to the ground within seconds. There's different time scales, a few seconds for BAT, 60 seconds for XRT, and roughly 200 seconds for UVAT. These will include actual images, not just right ascension declination coordinates, but they will include thumbnail images. So in the case of UVAT, you will have the finding chart available for you on the ground in 200 seconds. You can point your telescope right there, see all the necessary field stars, and know that you're on target, especially for, say, slit positioning and spectroscopy capability. Everything to everyone immediately. There will be no data sets held up, subsets. Everything is available to everyone as soon as it's available. As soon as it's on the ground. The,
from the West Malaysia, are you sure you have an echo over the
water? We have a 19 degree, the baseline right now is a 19 degree, so we do a dogleg maneuver using the margin lift capability of the Delta 2 that we have to get us down from 28 down to 19. Okay. 7 out of the 18 orbits will pass over Melindy every day. So the latency between getting the full data set for each burst is 2 to 3 orbits maximum. For the burst, not continuously. That's too much data. But there'll be snapshots taken of high time resolution, like spectral resolution. No. Let me run through this plot chart here. T0, the gamma ray burst happens in 5 to 10 seconds. Actually, this we've decreased this number now that we know which onboard processor we'll be using. The SLU begins, a calculation is made, and at 12 seconds, well, roughly about 7 seconds, the location is transmitted via TDRS multi-access. And is on the ground and available to the community. For an average burst, about 50 seconds later, we're on target. The XRT has a quick snapshot. It transmits that to the ground through TDRS, multi-access. UVOT's finding chart with a quick snapshot is available at 200 seconds. This is a distribution of a model for spacecraft operations showing the distribution of SLU times to be on target. These are in seconds here, average median time about 50. We will monitor gamma ray burst positions, coming back to them periodically, and the distribution of times being on target for any given gamma ray burst for the narrow field of instruments is shown by this distribution here, and this time scale is in days. People interested in doing follow-ups, show you here. This is the BAT instrument, fully coded, half-coded. Here is the FFT calculations, BAT projections. Those calculations are done to the ACS, transferred over to the SLU. Here's what an XRT image transmitted to the ground would look like. This is what a typical UVOT thumbnail sketch would look like. And so you can see your transient right there, and now people like Hubble or Keck can use this finding chart to do their work. And if it wasn't clear from earlier images, this is just a computer-generated CAD model. The BAT instrument, coded aperture up here, the two co-aligned narrow field of view instruments, totally separated from this unit, can be integrated and tested separate from the spacecraft, minimizes cost, minimizes schedule time. This is the AeroAstro spacecraft bus. And I think I'll leave it right there and ask for questions. No, we're not. We're using S-band. That's a debate that's going on inside the collaboration right now on what to do with the survey data. How far to push it?
Well, nominally, what will the survey do?
I'm not really an expert on that, but it will be able to identify steady state sources and locate transient sources. It's 30 times more sensitive than EOA-4 was in the hard X-ray band.
Don has the same discussion of headache 2 this morning, that it would provide essentially an available signal early on before the position is available. And that would be very useful for the kind of thing you
Yeah, we can do that, yes. I sort of made a mental note of that when I heard, oh, that's a good idea.
My question is a little bit technical. For a spacecraft, rather small one, which you will use, will it be really possible for you to keep the accuracy of pointing of the order of 0.3 arc seconds during 10 to 3 seconds time interval?
That's what the ACS, the Goddard ACS people and the Spectrum Astro people claim that they will be. The jitter of the spacecraft is not, is larger than that, okay? But the centaurting capability of the detected sources will be 0.3 arc seconds.
I wonder that even some small thermal, difference in thermal conditions may affect the accuracy, because it will be on the orbit and it will be different in thermal conditions. So this is something which I just...
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's a very small number. The people on the XRT and UVOT teams are going to pretty great lengths to guarantee the thermal stability, also the co-alignment. We have on-orbit co-alignment checking recalibration procedures that are pretty straightforward. So today I won't. I'm not an expert on that area, on that. Yes, but it to me, and from the various team meetings, it seems like that it's a very doable kind of thing.
When you read that photon counting UV camera, the 0.3 of an arc second focal point scale that we've got within the UV camera doesn't sound challenging. It doesn't sound extremely difficult. You ought to be able to achieve that.
Right, and we have two onboard star trackers, which will give. Probably at the 10 hertz level, instantaneous absolute pointing information for coalescing a time series of data back to one registration.
I don't think you need to register the UVOT in the XRT to anything even resembling 0.3 arc second, right? I mean, the X-ray burst goes off, and if you see it in the optical, that's the first thing. You just need to register 2 arc second. But the question I had was, maybe I misunderstood you. Are you planning to actually do the galaxy imaging also with the UVOT so that you could do the galaxy transient offset?
If it's bright enough, yes. But since the galaxies, host galaxies tend to be 24, 25 magnitude, we probably will not see them. And so that's ground-based.
How big are your pixels?
It's for UVOT, it's a 17 arc minute field of view with 2K pixel.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not the perfect ground
for. Okay. I'm sorry, but we don't have enough time for this session. So let's thank the speaker again. And we move to the next talk.